It's been said that the church is not a museum of saints, but it's a hospital for sinners. And when you think about that statement, you know, most of us would much rather pretend to be a saint on display than to call for an ambulance when we are in need of help. I don't know. There are just so many factors behind that, so many things that run through our mind. But week after week, if you think about it, many of us will walk into the church building and we will likely sit by people that we have known for years, but we would never dream of sharing our innermost struggles with those people. Now, what's wrong with that? Maybe you're different, and maybe I'm way off base on that, but that's just the way I think sometimes, and the way it seems sometimes, that week after week, we, and if you remember, Brad called it, you know, we huddle up together, but yet it's almost as if we're not comfortable enough with one another or in touch with one another enough to be able to say, hey, I'm struggling with something. I need your help. I need you to pray for me. I need you. Folks, the church ought to be the first place that takes place, where we feel that we can do that, but yet we struggle. Now, a lot of times in that struggle, the struggle is because of our own pride, but another factor is that in the church, we seem unwilling at times to talk about certain things because they are uncomfortable to talk about. You know, and it may even be that within our own families, we have trouble talking about these things, much less our church family, our spiritual family. And so, you know, there's a variety of reasons why we struggle to talk about certain things, choosing rather to ignore them, just act like they're not there, just brush them aside, just hope they go away, or just, you know, just try to get past it in whatever way we can. Maybe we try to cover things up, and we just hope nobody will notice that there's something we're dealing with or something we're struggling with. Maybe, you know, I can put on a happy enough face, a good enough face, that nobody will ask me any questions. And, you know, it's like I've said before, you know, it's like the video of the family, you know, coming to worship service on Sunday morning. The video before they cross the threshold into the building, you know, they are a mess. Their lives are, nobody has what on they need to have on. They're struggling. They're yelling at each other. But as soon as they walk through that door, it's the picture of the perfect family. You know, we're not perfect. We all have things that we're struggling with. Why do we leave them at the door? It should be that we can come together and we can open up because we love each other so much. We want to get to heaven together, that we're able to share those things instead of trying to cover them up or simply reject people who might bring those things that are uncomfortable to talk about, bring them up. In Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2, Paul urged the church to do something. And what he urged the church to do was to bear each other's burdens. Now, I want you to understand what that really means. Sometimes we will talk about those one another passages and we'll think about, you know, what we are to do for one another and towards one another. And that sounds all well and good. Bear each other's burdens. Bear one another's burdens. Okay, that means when I'm down, you can pat me on the back and you say, well, I hope things get better. No, that's not what he's saying. You have to understand the deeper meaning and the context of this. If you read it in another translation, the easy-to-read version says this: help each other with your troubles. How do we help each other with our troubles? What Paul is saying in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 2, Paul is saying, since every man has special temptations, and since each one of us has those so easy besetting sins, those things that easily entangle us and ensnare us, he says, since we have those things, we understand that those things that entangle us, they are heavy burdens in our life. They weigh us down. They are bearing on our souls. And so Paul says, he says, help each other with your troubles. Since every one of us are struggling with things, we should help each other, is what he says. Aid each other in regard to these things and to help each other overcome these things. Now that's important. You know, it's not that we come together and if somebody responds to the invitation and we go to them and we hug them and we love them, which we should and need to do, And then we go on about our way and think, you know what, I've done a good job helping them overcome whatever it is they're dealing with. I hate to bust your bubble, but no, you haven't. No, I haven't. If we think that's the extent of our bearing one another's burdens, then we are gravely mistaken in our responsibility towards one another. You see, he says, help each other. Help one another. Aid one another in order that we can help each other overcome whatever it is we're struggling with. And that's why we said last time that the church is to be a safe place. The church is to be a safe place to help each other, to sustain each other. If you see one about to stumble under whatever burden that they have in their life, you hold them up. You help to keep them afloat, to keep them above water. And so when you look at what Paul says, we understand that with more grace and with more love, we can turn on the light in the darkened rooms of each other's hearts if we're truly in tune with this, and let the Lord's church become that safe place, that safe haven for the uncomfortable things that all of us in one way or another are dealing with in our lives. You see, that's what it's supposed to be like. It's not that we come and see each other 3 times a week or 2 times a week or however how many times we think we need to be here. It's that we're coming, searching, or offering something. We're either offering encouragement or we're seeking encouragement. Because we understand that's who we are to be, what God has designed the church to be. This series, The Elephant in the Church, as I've said before, elephants in the church, or that phrase, elephant in the room, it deals with something so obvious, but no one really wants to talk about it. It's something that everybody knows about, but Siri's talking to me up here. I don't know why Siri's talking to me. I ask her a question. It's something that nobody, you know, wants to address or talk about. Or maybe it's an issue that just makes us uncomfortable to talk about, and so we just stay quiet about it. Sometimes it's a subject that maybe we don't know a lot about. You know what happens when we don't know a lot about something? What do we tend to do? We tend to just ignore it, don't we? Now, some are different. Some, you know, I like, if I don't know something, know how to do something, I like to look up to see how to do it. I want to figure it out. I have a child who's like that. And at 6 o'clock in the morning, one day last week, he was out in the shop because he had looked up how to make something, and he was out in the shop making that at 6 o'clock in the morning, 11 years old. Of course, I can't find my tools now, but that's okay. He was trying. He didn't mess anything up. But a lot of times, if there's something we just don't know a lot about, we tend to let it go, ignore it, or just not talk about it instead of trying to learn and understand what it is. And that has to do with a lot of these elephants in the rooms that we're going to deal with. Because some of you might be saying, as we talk about some of these things, you might be saying, well, is that really a problem? I don't see it. You know, it's not evident. I don't have a problem with that. So surely nobody else has a problem with that. We don't need to think that way. The way we need to think is, all of us have baggage. All of us have struggles. And we need to be ready to help one another, to lift one another up, to be those who are choosing not to ignore the situation, but choosing to be in such a loving way one who is going to help one who might be stumbling, to keep them from falling completely. But here's the important thing about this and the reason for this series, and I said this last time. The church ought not be a place where we can't talk about relevant truths. It should be the first place that we can talk about relevant truths. Jesus told us in John chapter 8 and verse 32, he says, the truth is what sets one free. What does it set one free from? It sets one free from the bondage of sin. And it's that important. It sets one free. The church should be a place where we can feel free to be open about whatever is hurting or hindering us in our relationship with the Lord, whatever may be challenging our faith. If we're doubting, if we're struggling with that, the church should be the place, the people that we can come to about the sin that so easily besets us. It should be those people who we can talk to about those things. And in our hearts and minds, actually know that we're going to be lovingly encouraged and not judged by these things. We're not going to be ridiculed or put down or an eyebrow raised saying, wonder why they involved in that or doing that. Or even if somebody responds, I wonder what they did. That should have no place in the body of Christ. Because you see, we need to lovingly encourage by the truth of God's Word, lifting one another up. But still, knowing these things, it still happens. We're reluctant to discuss. But the church needs to be a safe place. Last time we said that it is made safe by our love, and that's our love for God and our love for one another. It's made safe by our vision, and that's seeing people as God sees people. Not looking at people and just seeing problems, but seeing people who are made in the image of God, who are having struggles, and we want to reach those people. Who did Jesus spend His time with? Did He spend His time with people who were well or people who were sick? Jesus spent His time with those who were sick. And so we need to see as God sees people. And so the church is made safe by our vision. And then it's also made safe by our commitment to the truth. We're not going to compromise truth. If somebody's struggling with something, we're not going to say, we accept you and we accept your sin. No. We're going to say, we accept you and we love you and we want to help you overcome this that transgresses God's law. And we're going to do it in a loving way. So that's who we're to be. Tonight, the lesson that I want us to talk about is going to be a lesson that will preview our next lesson as well. But the lesson tonight is about addiction. And you see that and you think about that and you think, well, you know what, at AA meetings and therapy sessions, talking about addiction, it makes sense. But, you know, for some reason, it's just not a topic most church people want to talk about. Well, I don't have any experience in that. I don't know anybody that's ever dealt with addiction, so therefore, why should we even spend time on this? Or you might say, well, that's something that people who deal with these things, you know, they need other help, or they just need to get over it, or they just need to have more faith. Oh, no. We need to understand that addiction is something far deeper than we realize. It grabs a hold. It's a sin that so easily besets, and it's something that takes over the person. It's not even the person that you once knew. And I have a passion about this because this has affected my family personally in the last few years. And I have seen how the person that you grew up loving and knowing and caring about and knowing how loving they were, how they were not there in this situation. And they needed help. A lot of times they don't see that they need help. A lot of times they reject help. And in those moments, a lot of times we want to just stand back and say, well, they deserve what they get. Oh, woe is us if that is the way we feel and the way we think. No one deserves those things. Well, they brought it upon themselves, and so therefore, you know what? Just let them figure it out. I'm not wasting my time with them. Oh, shame on us if we don't see the value of the soul who is ensnared by Satan. We have to, again, have the vision of looking and seeing these people and those who are struggling with addiction, they're in need. Now, when you think about addiction, certain addictions are definitely more socially acceptable to talk about than others. For example, you know, it's okay to talk about Frank and his smoking. We might even joke about that or joke about those things. But when it comes to John and his alcoholism, well, let's just be quiet about that. We can't talk about that. That's a family problem. It's something that he's dealt with for years. We're just not going to touch that with a 10-foot pole. And so there's some things that it seems are more socially acceptable to talk about. And yes, in many churches, a person's addictions can even become fuel for gossip. You know what I'm talking about. You know what oh so-and-so got involved in? You know what they're dealing with? And we're talking to other people about people instead of talking to those who are struggling to talk with people. Oh, woe is us if we do those things. And then we're caught in sin ourselves if that's what happens, if we begin to do that and allow those things to take over our lives. However, if the church were to first approach one another as family, And that's the key in all of this. That's the key in our love for one another. It's how we look at each other, how we think about each other in this room, how we address one another. If we just think of each other in this room as an occasional acquaintance that we see a couple times a week, then we're nowhere where we need to be when it comes to being a part of the body of Christ. You see, God designed it as a family, and if we don't see it and treat it as a family, then are we treating the church as we should and thinking of what Christ actually died for? You see, if we would first approach it as family, then addicts in the church might feel safer and vulnerable about their struggles and opening up about these things. But often they just need to be loved, and they need to feel safe enough to know that they can expose those deepest parts of their lives in a community where the addiction isn't crushing them every second of their life and every moment of their life, and thus reach out for help from those who know that are going to lovingly do everything they can to help them with whatever it is. Now, I want to share with you some things as far as addiction goes. I want us to look at a few things. When we think of addiction, we likely think of a person on the street, maybe somebody that's homeless or degenerate. When we think about addiction, we think about the worst of the worst. We think about those things that are prevalent in society, I guess. But we generally, our perception of addiction is probably the ones you see in the movies, or you see on the news, you see all of these things, and so we have that idea. And because of that, you might be saying, well, this isn't really a problem here, is it? Amongst 130, 40 folks that are here tonight, or 200 if we have on Sunday morning. Surely nobody in here is affected by addiction. So let's just move to the next one, because that's not a problem. I want you to think for just a moment. Think in your life who you know who has dealt with some type of addiction in their life. I would say just about every one of us in here would know somebody. Now, think about the number of people who are in this room. Somebody is affected by something. And I want us to have a little broader picture of addiction, because I don't want us to just think about it with the perception that we might have as far as addiction goes when you're thinking about, just maybe drugs and alcohol and things like that. I want to share some of these statistics with you about addiction, and I want you to understand that it's not just about those things. It's not just about drugs or alcohol. We look at that and we say, okay, those are the bad things. But addiction can touch the lives of all of us, even in the church, in many different ways. You see, this is what addiction is, and this is from Psychology Today, and I thought it was a very concise definition. Addiction is a condition in which a person engages in the use of substance or in a behavior for which the temporary rewarding effects provide a compelling incentive to repeatedly pursue the behavior despite detrimental consequences. You see, there's a cycle when you're talking about addiction. There may be some circumstance that happens in a person's life that person seeks relief, they seek refuge, they seek something else that will help them overcome whatever devastating effect in their life has come because of whatever has happened. And so they search out something. They find maybe something. Maybe they look in a lot of different places. And maybe they find that one thing that for a moment causes them to forget. It numbs them. It causes them to forget about the struggles or the problems that they've been dealing with. And then they go into, as the cycle continues, they go into, again, that feeling of euphoria. Everything's great. But then that wears off, and then you have a cycle of guilt. You start thinking about what you've done. And then you come around again and there's a cycle of shame. Because you know in your heart of hearts you don't need to do whatever it is. And yet you want to have relief once again from whatever traumatic experience you've had. And it repeats itself. And so addiction becomes a cycle. Again, a person engaging in the use of substance or behavior that you have that rewarding effect temporarily, just for a moment. You have it, and it takes all of those things away. And after you forget about the guilt and the shame, you come back around and you want that feeling again. You see, that's the process, or that's what happens in addiction. Well, when we think of addiction, again, most of us think about going back to alcohol and drugs. And indeed, alcohol addiction cost, let me see if I've got this up here. It cost Americans, in just America, look at this, if you can read that, $250 billion a year. 2 billion people have problems with alcohol worldwide, and 185 million abuse drugs. Folks, think about how many people that is. You don't think it's a problem? You look at those numbers. 70% of violent crime is enacted by someone under the influence of alcohol or drugs. 90% of muggings and theft are related to drug use. And maybe that's why we look at these things and say, okay, when I think of addiction, I think of this. This is the problem. I want you to understand that alcohol and drugs aren't the only crippling addictions that people deal with. And that's why I wanted this, and I thought that it's necessary for this to be an elephant in the church and in the room, because we're not comfortable talking about these things. Oh, we know about it. We see it on the news. And again, maybe we know some of the details about some of these things, but I don't think we think about it in the broad spectrum. 1 out of 8 Americans, on the very bottom there, 1 out of 8 Americans are addicted to something. How many people are in this room tonight? 1 out of 8. Now, I know you can play with the figures when you're looking at statistics and the reliability on them, but I think that's pretty close. And you think, well, it's not in the church, Hobie. You're reaching for straws. You know this, folks, it's a problem. Addiction statistics are scarce because many destructive habits, they're not yet officially recognized as being addictions. Among those things, gambling, eating, internet, all of those things you think about, they're problematic. But not all of those are looked at as addictions, per se. Some are on the verge. But let me give you the 10 most common addictions. The 10 most common addictions: alcohol, tobacco, drugs, gambling, shopping, sex, food, video games, the internet, and the addiction to work. Think about that. Goes a little farther than drugs and alcohol, doesn't it? These are the top 10. Now, tonight what I want to do for a few minutes is we're not going to cover all of these, but I want to cover a few just to give you an understanding and an idea and help you to realize why this affects us, why this is the elephant, why we tend to overlook these things, and why sometimes, maybe, again, we don't understand some of these and we're standoffish about them. And we don't want to talk about them. Let's just go on. Let's move on and talk about God's love. Well, that'd be great, but there's all of these other issues and problems that we need to deal with in order for people to appreciate God's love and to understand it and to know it. They've got to get these things out of their way because they're blinded by these things in their life. And so it's important. Let's look at these quickly. First, let's look at alcohol. I know alcohol itself could be an elephant in the church. I've talked with people in the church who don't see any problem or issue with drinking. Oh, I do it occasionally, or social drinking. I think it's fine, it's great, it's wonderful, is what people say. But I want you to think about its effects, and I want you to associate this with the Christian's character. Oh, I know in the Bible it doesn't say, thou shalt not drink. Well, didn't Jesus turn water into wine? Didn't Peter use some, or Paul tell Timothy to use some for the stomach's sake? Wasn't there, you know, don't we find throughout? Again, we're not understanding the context of those things, and we're really stretching it. When we think that alcohol is fine for beverage use, then I think we're neglecting our character and what the effects of alcohol has on individuals and on society. It's a legal intoxicant. That's another thing. Well, it's legal. There's nothing wrong with it. Society says that I can do it. Society says it's fine, so it must be okay. I can do it. Why do you do it in secret? Why do you hide it from your parents if you're underage? What's wrong with that? If there's nothing wrong with it, why is it so taboo in society to do it below the age of what society says is okay? The legal toxin is incredibly destructive for both the individual and society at large. The WHO, which is the World Health Organization, reports that alcohol is linked to more than 60 types of disease and injury. It causes 20 to 30% of worldwide incidences of esophageal cancer, liver cancer, cirrhosis of the liver, epilepsy, murder, and motor vehicle accidents. I have a bias towards alcohol, and I know some of you have been affected by it as well. Drunk driver killed my brother and his wife. I have no use for it. I've seen the effects as a minister on the effects of family and marriages. I don't see that it has a place in a Christian's life. I just don't see that it's needed. And you say, well, Hobie, that's your opinion. If I'm trying to look more like Christ, why would I introduce something into my life and into my family's life that is so destructive? I think that's how we should look at it, instead of trying to justify it. Well, I like it. I like a lot of things, but I know they're not pleasing to God. You look at this and you see it causes 1.8 million deaths, contributes to 58.3 million of life years worldwide that are lost to disability. And so alcohol use is one of the things that's on the rise. It's a common factor in violent crimes, including spousal and children abuse, child abuse. It's a problem. And addiction to it is a problem. You look at another common one. We look in the top two. You look at tobacco. My dad smoked for years. I understand how hard it is to quit. I understand that it's not easy. I realize that, you know, my dad went from smoking to using chewing tobacco. I don't know which was worse, the smell of that or getting spit on from time to time, but it was nasty. I remember one time riding with my dad on the tractor, and this is pretty gross. I was on the fender well of a 135 Massey Ferguson, and we were going down the road, and he forgot I was sitting there, and he turned to spit, and it hit me right in the face, and I said, boy, I don't want any part of that mess. That is just gross. Tobacco is an issue. Still holds first place, ranking as the substance that causes the most health damage worldwide. 1.3 billion deaths occur because of tobacco addiction annually. 2002, the World Health Organization reported smoking caused over 90% of lung cancer cases in men, 70% of the cases of cancer in women, 56 to 80% of those cases chronic respiratory diseases, 22% of the cases of cardiovascular disease. You see that it says tobacco causes 8.8% of deaths worldwide, 4.1% of life years lost to disability. Tobacco use is something that is rising worldwide. It's expected to cause 10 million annual deaths by 2020, according to some statistics. 70% of those deaths will occur in developing countries. One of the things that I saw in the Philippines that was so prevalent was cell phones and cigarettes. Everyone seemed to have those things. And again, you can see its effects. But then let's look at generically at drugs and think about the United States estimates that 185 million people worldwide were consuming drugs in the late 1990s. And you think about how that's increased since the late 1990s. Both prescription medicines and illegal drug use is on the rise throughout the world. Many addictive prescription medications, Oxycontin, Vicodin, have become as common as marijuana use in young people. It's a problem. Children especially make use of solvents such as cleaning products, paint, glues, nail polish. There are kids who are sniffing stuff to get a high. I know on several occasions in law enforcement of patrolling, finding kids who their faces were covered with paint because they were sniffing paint. Their brains were fried. For that momentary fix, was it worth ruining your life physically and spiritually? No, it wasn't, but it's a problem. Drug trade threatens the lives of and the social fabric of many communities and cultures. The most heavily used drugs are marijuana, cocaine, heroin, and methamphetamines. And so the top three, alcohol, tobacco, and drugs. But I want us to look at a few others when we're talking about addictions, because maybe we don't have anybody struggling with alcohol. Maybe we don't have anybody dealing with drugs. Maybe we don't have too many who struggle with tobacco use. But what about gambling? Is that a problem? Well, now you're starting to meddle, Hobie, because I like to do these pools at work. I like to do these raffles and everything else. Well, a raffle's not gambling, is it? Yeah, technically it is. You look at these things and think gambling addiction is on the rise, partly due to its accessibility and partly due to the change in acceptability. You think today gambling is available in every store. It's available. You can do it on the internet. It's sanctioned by the government, folks. Well, it's helping our schools. Think about the scholarships. Think about all the money that is going towards. And so it must be okay. Society says it's okay. The government says it's okay. Guess what? It's become a problem. It's ruined lives. It's ruined marriages. It's ruined families. It's an issue. It's an elephant in the church that we don't want to talk about a lot of times, because it is so socially accepted. The most common forms of gambling are lottery, scratch cards, office pools, raffles, bingo, horse racing, casino gambling. Maybe we don't have that issue, but we need to know about it. And we need to know that it is an issue. Boy, this one's going to hurt. I like video games. I'm a PUBG master. I'll give you my handle later. But many parents recognize the addictive nature of video games in past decades. They are said to affect grades. Video games are said to be linked to ADD. A 2007 study found that almost 1 out of every 10 youth gamers show enough symptoms of damage to their school, family, and psychological functioning to merit serious concerns. How many of us have allowed our children to be babysat by the computer or the video games or something? Because you know what? It keeps them quiet. Keeps them out of our hair. We can do our stuff. And so we give them that game or whatever it is, and we let them go at it, not thinking the detrimental effects of all that time of escaping into something that is not reality. You see, that's what becomes a problem. The introduction of online gaming, it says, in virtual worlds has caused gaming addictions to reach new highs, especially in the Asian countries. Well, Hobie, that's in the Asian countries. That's not here. Why are we talking about that? It's on the rise. It's affecting our children. It's affecting many. But if you go back one more, if I've got it up there, it's not only affecting our children. This was interesting to me to see that video games are becoming more and more appealing to adults. One study found that 44%, almost half, are between the ages of 18 and 49. Again, it gives you an opportunity to escape reality. Now, how does that associate with drugs and alcohol? Why are they gone to? Why do people seek those things out? It helps them to escape reality. And then when you get back into reality, and reality is not what you want it to be or what you think it ought to be, you escape right back to it. And it destroys your mind, it destroys your relationships, it destroys all of these things. And here's another big one, folks, internet. The internet addiction is a global concern. The rise in many other addictions can be traced to the introduction of the internet. Oh, there's a lot of good things we have about it. You know, we can Google, we can search, we can find so much information. We have, you know, if I get this quote right, we're swimming in a sea of knowledge, but sinking in an ocean of ignorance. I think so, the way it goes. We have all of this at our fingertips, but yet it has become an addiction to a lot of people. Gambling, shopping, sex, pornography addictions are among those that can be traced back to internet issues. Internet addicts spend more and more time on the computer at the expense of relationships with friends and family. They risk their jobs and school academics. They may become indebted, feel unable to stop spending so much time on the internet. They feel guilty and act secretive about it, and experience symptoms of withdrawal when they are away from their computers. I saw a statistic earlier today as I was reading about some of these things that said The average college student cannot spend any more than 10 minutes away from their electronic device and their internet. When they do, they have withdrawal symptoms. Have you ever seen somebody with withdrawal symptoms when it comes to drugs or alcohol or any of those things? It's the same effect the internet, social media, and having those things in the palm of your hand and that easy access, they have the same types of reactions. The same chemicals are produced and the same chemical reactions happen in the brain when they are withdrawal and don't have that access to those things. You go to a place and they tell you, we don't have internet access here. What do you do? What am I going to do? No Wi-Fi? How will I live? I was in Kentucky visiting Dad this past Friday, and the boys went with me, and they still have a VCR with the VHS tape. I taught Eli how to rewind a VHS tape. That's how advanced technology has become, and I thought in my lifetime I would never see that. And I look at him, and I can see him on a tablet or see him on the computer, and he can do things that, you know, it's taken me years to figure out. And yet he didn't know how to do those things. So when you look at this and you think, internet addicts spend all of this time and they have these symptoms of withdrawal. Now, types of internet addiction include gaming, cybersex, social networking, shopping, gambling, and information mining. Now, let's not talk about Amazon or eBay, because, you know, we don't want to go there, do we? That's part of it. Social networking and shopping and all of those things. So it's another issue. Let's look at let me just tell you one more. Sex is one more. Media and the internet contribute to the rise of sex addicts. They use sex as a drug to escape from reality. Again, all of these things do that. Now, I've got 5 minutes to tell you what's the most important about this. It's what can we do to get the elephant out of the church? What can we do to help those who are struggling with this? We need to know about these things because if we're going to be a safe place, we need to know what can we do to lovingly accept and help those who are struggling with whatever. How can we help those people feel that they can come and say to us, hey, I'm struggling with this. I need help with this. Well, as I said earlier, AA meetings and therapy sessions, you know, talking about addiction, it makes sense in those places, but for some reason it's not a topic that we want to talk about or we don't often hear about in the church. But instead of reaching out and learning how to help those who are struggling in many instances, a person's addictions with those things and it becoming that source of gossip, we talk about them instead of to them, and that's the key in all of this. If the church approaches this as seeing a family member in need, then addicts are going to feel safer in talking about their struggles. Now, let me give you, if I can catch my breath, some of these things. I'm just going to go ahead and put all of them up there, and I will address them as I can. The church should always be a safe place where people feel love and acceptance. It doesn't matter how the person may dress, how the person may look, what their background is. The church has a responsibility to accept everyone. Now, I did not say accept their sin, but we do have a responsibility to accept every person as they're made in the image of God with open arms and loving arms. And this is especially true for those who are battling addictions and those who are working their way towards trying to get past these things and breaking that cycle and recovering. Because the church involves imperfect people, they're... you know, is always the possibility that our behavior and how we react to people is going to be detrimental to them if we're not careful and if we're not conscious of our responsibility to those people. It's only when we understand the importance of leadership, understand the importance of the role of the gospel in the church and the strength of us serving others collectively in a united way. Let's talk about the power of leadership. The tone of the church comes from its relationship, people, or its leadership. People respond to the direction they receive, and they take their direction from people they trust to lead them. Now, one of the things I want to say about our leadership is in the last couple of years, they've seen the need. We now, and some of you have been affected by this, we now have access to this counseling center in Dixon. I think it's one of the biggest blessings we've had in the last few years. Because there are things that we struggle with There are things that are beyond my capability of helping people that are addicted or having issues and struggles. And that's one of the things, the growing trends we see in the church. It is the need for faith-based, God-centered counseling. Because, folks, we live in a broken world and people are struggling with things that we don't grasp and understand. And so we understand how important this is, and I think it's important, and I think you need to pray for and thank our elders for their foresight in seeing the importance and the need of this, because it is so vital. You know what? We're not going to get through these, and we need to. I hate to do this, but we'll next Wednesday night, I will try to finish up with this, and because I want you to really understand what our responsibility and all that we've talked about tonight. But think about this, leadership, think about the role of the gospel in the church, and then think about how we serving together and being united in our efforts, this, how this will be a blessing to those who are hurting.